I think one of the beauties about the aggregation of marginal gains is that that applies to both how you can improve, you know, throughout a race, throughout your training, all those kind of things. But it's also the mentality that's focusing on the mile that you're in, rather than trying to change 70% of something, change 1%, rather than focusing on how am I going to feel when I get to mile 70, worry about where you're at mile 20. You know, it's taking those small increments and breaking things down into digestible pieces.
Welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation, where we go for virtual runs with experts that teach us how to become better runners and possibly better humans.
And that expert today is Adam Kimball, and he's going to share his philosophy that it's the little things that add up to big changes. Our technology is important to us, and one of the things that I love about technology is earbuds. We want to make sure that you are aware of Ultimate Ear Fits True Wireless Custom Fit Earbuds.
Ultimate Ear Fits are the world's most comfortable earbuds, premium sound, and all-day comfort.
This is what you do. You take them out of the box, you put them in your ear, download the app, hit start, and those earbuds heat up and mold to your inner ear. It's a perfect custom fit. And why is that important, Don?
You got to keep the good sounds in and the bad sounds out, Scott.
They're a guaranteed perfect fit in just 60 seconds.
And there's 8 hours of continuous playback on a single charge, and with the charging case, 20 full hours in your pocket.
I've been enjoying some really good audio quality the last couple months that I've been using mine, and you can too. You can get, for a limited time, 15% off your pair of Ultimate Ear Fits True Wireless Earbuds at ue.com/fits and just use the code TRN at checkout. That's 15% off with the promo code TRN at ue.com/fits. We talk about how important the mind is when we're trail and ultra running. And today we're talking to Adam Kimball about that. One way to become better at this is to practice the mindfulness. And you can do that at Open, a mindfulness studio that we're going to tell you about right now and that you need to check out.
Scott, we've talked about it on the podcast in the past. Running is a form of meditation. You know what else is a form of meditation? Meditation. You can do what Scott and I have done and go check out open-together.com/TRN and check them out.
Open is a website and a mobile app with a library of over 300 breathing, meditating, and move classes that you can access either live classes and talk to the teacher one-on-one or on-demand classes when it fits your schedule.
And you could try Open for 30 days free using the promo code TRN. Go to open-together.com/TRN and use the code TRN and receive 30 days free. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman.
And my name is Scott Warr. And today we are going to talk with Adam Kimball. He's a returning guest. And we really enjoy Adam because he is so fun. He's always smiling, has a great attitude. And if you don't know anything about Adam, here's the one thing that you should know. In the last year or so, he has won. Freeman, you probably didn't know this. He's won 8 out of the last 9 races that he has performed in. 8 of the last 9, he's outright won them.
I didn't even know there were 9 races last year. What are you making these races up, Adam? I mean, where are you finding these?
The first 6 of those 8 were the Adam Kimball Backyard Ultra. It's me and my wife. And then the other 2, I can't remember which ones those were.
You kept the dog on a leash so that the dog wouldn't win?
Yeah, exactly.
And Adam has a pretty eclectic trophy case in his house. If you don't know about him, he's won the Wheel, which was a Discovery Channel survival show. Google that because it's pretty amazing and what he went through to win that. He's a winner of 2 self-supported multi-stage races. In 2016, he ran from California to Georgia in 60 days. In 2017, he set an FKT running the length of Great Britain with Chris King. And he also has won the Price is Right. For you that are outside the U.S. that don't know the Price is Right, it's, I think, the longest running TV game show, and he won it. And you won a car, didn't you, Adam?
I didn't win a car. I won a bunch of of kitchen appliances, a big screen TV, and a trip to Japan, which was the best part.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So you made it to the big showcase. Is that what they call it? Your big showcase?
Showcase Showdown, yeah.
The reason we're talking to Adam is he recently participated in the 2021 Leadville 100, where he finished eighth place. And he had some lessons that he learned and was chatting with us about those over email. And we thought, this is the subject of a great podcast. Adam, tell us a little bit about what you were talking about with the Leadville 100.
Yeah, I guess it was maybe 6 weeks or so ago now, out in Leadville, Colorado, ran the Leadville Trail 100, which is, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, a very historical race, one of the sort of original 100 milers in the U.S. And kind of, I think, like, to me, the coolest thing about Leadville is that if you talk to somebody who isn't really familiar with ultra running, a lot of them will drop that word, that name, because that, you know, there's some name recognition there. So even somebody that doesn't really know anything about ultra running, they'll say, oh, have you ever done the Leadville race? You know, so it's got a kind of cool history there. But yeah, went out there to run that race and had a very, very challenging first half of the race. Just one of those instances where nothing seemed to be going right. And I couldn't quite figure out why. Just wasn't feeling super energized. Body wasn't feeling great. It could have had to do something with the fact that basically the entire race takes place above 10,000 feet, which is what makes that race so challenging. But, you know, nothing was really working. And so I kind of got into this mentality of, I've got to just do whatever I can to control the small number of things that I can control. Cause, you know, my stomach was giving me problems. After that starts, you can mess around with fuel, but there, you know, after it started, there wasn't a whole lot that I could do. So I just said, control what you can control, keep eating, keep drinking, keep doing the things that you can do, put one foot in front of the other, and hopefully things will change. And thankfully for me, the second half of the race was a lot different.
Why do you suppose things eventually changed?
I think honestly, it was just focusing on taking care of my body, listening to the body. There was, like I said, the challenges early on kind of set me back mentally in terms of, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm 10 miles in and not feeling good. And I'm thinking, this should have happened a lot later in the race, right? But again, for me, I always treat every single race as an opportunity to help me grow for a future race. And so having been in situations before where things weren't clicking, it doesn't happen every time, but a lot of the time, if you can just tell yourself, this is going to get better if I just do the right things, then at a certain point, it often does. And so for me, the thing that changed the race for me was the mental shift of, you know, really focusing on what I could do and handling the things that could potentially impact the rest of the race instead of focusing on what wasn't going right and then, you know, kind of digging myself a deeper hole.
And I think that you explained this to us, which was also intriguing, was it wasn't these big changes that you were working on. It was the very small, little, tiny things like, okay, I need to take more hydration or I need to take a little bit more nutrition. What were some of those small changes that you were working on in that first half of the race that eventually summed up and accumulated to the point where now things are working for you the second half of the race?
Yeah, that's a great question, Scott. The interesting thing to me is that some of those little changes were physical and some were mental. And that's the beauty of ultra running is that it's kind of like, I always forget how the saying goes, but Yogi Berra's got a funny saying that baseball is, you know, 80% mental and the other half is physical, something like that. And I feel like ultra running similar in that sense, but really it was, so early on, I was having those stomach issues as I mentioned. So I said to myself, okay, I'm going to do as little as possible to my stomach to cause any kind of disruption. And so that was really switching to liquid calories pretty early. I do that. I always have liquid calories mixed in, but it was switching almost exclusively to those. So starting with that. And then also, I think it was, I told myself not to start the race going too hard, especially because at 10,000 feet, you get worn out pretty quickly. But it was just telling myself, settle into this zone where you feel like you're running strong, where you can run all day. So it was honestly pulling the reins back a little bit and slowing things down to a pace where my body could digest a little bit better, at least until I was able to sort of catch up physically and feel a lot better. And then at that point was when I decided I can start pushing more and asking more of my body because it's seeming to handle it a bit better now.
I love the way that you said that because we've used this term in the past. I need to find my all-day pace. I need to start running early on in the race to say, yes, this pace I could do all day and perhaps all night, depending on the distance, and being honest with yourself early, not settling in later to, well, this is what I have left. I better make this my all-day pace. No, just from the start line, talking about and finding that all-day pace. Here's what came to my mind as you're talking about that. I would love to be able to dig into this. I don't even know where it goes. And maybe it's going to just be a lot of silence because it goes nowhere. But I'm thinking about the conversation between the body and the mind as you're getting into that place. You're in a space, really, the whole world becomes your run at that moment. And that's one of the cool things I like about it. You're listening to the body. You're listening to the mind. They're having a conversation. You're reaching a little deeper. You're pulling back. You're putting different calories in. You're seeing how you respond when you put a calorie in or you put some hydration in. Let's talk about that mental conversation and physical conversation that happens in real time for sometimes 5 hours or 15 or 30 hours.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about ultra running is the total connection of mind, body, and spirit. You're trying to push yourself in sometimes in ways you never have before or to an extent that you know is going to be absolutely physically demanding and mentally demanding. And then you have to do everything in your power to support that physically as well. And so there's going to be gaps where you're listening to the body and you're responding accordingly. And then there's times when you have to sort of hit the override switch and tell yourself, okay, I'm doing the right things, but I've got to ignore these things that are going on mentally. You know, I mentioned this to you guys, it's fresh in my mind, but speaking about the Eliud Kipchoge movie, The Last Milestone, one of the things that his coaches and the people that train with him in his camp talked about is his ability to take the mental struggle and just push it to the back of his mind and say, I'm going to deal with this as I cross the finish line. And so that's part of it too. It's you have to have the support of the nutrition, the hydration, and doing the right things. But then at a certain point, you also have to have that mental overcome of the physical shortcomings that are undoubtedly going to happen, especially in a race as long as 100 miles.
So that's such an interesting statement, Adam, that you're talking about. You've got to know when that you can ignore something or override something because of the experience you've had or because that's the right thing to do. How do you know when to argue with yourself and push something back that could potentially be a problem?
Yeah, that's the tough thing. I like to tell people when it comes to that sort of thing, it's the classic scenario of, am I injured versus just hurting? Should I, you know, call this race or should I drag it to the finish line and get it done no matter what? And for me, you have to come to that conclusion on your own just through experiences. And so I like to, you know, I've run different races and expeditions and I know how I felt at certain times and in hindsight, which of those scenarios, you know, potentially put me in a position where my body was harmed afterwards or, you know, I had a much longer recovery, those sort of things. And so, like you said, with the sort of in the moment calculations, Don, when it comes to nutrition and those sort of things and how the body responds, you also have to be making in the moment decisions about what you're doing to your body and if you need to back off, keep pushing through, or what you need to do to potentially get to that finish line. So for me, it's having that experience. I forget if I've used this analogy with you guys before, but I love talking to my athletes and friends about digging the well deeper. It's like every time you go through another event, another experience, it doesn't have to be a race, it can be anything in life, you dig your well deeper. So the next time you've got more to draw from. And I think that comes with decision-making as well, because you can say, okay, I've felt this before. I know that I can work through this, or, oh, this is something new. You know, my intuition is maybe telling me this isn't the right thing to push through. I need to listen to the, you know, my mind telling me you need to pull off the gas right now. So.
Hey, Adam, you referred just a moment ago to Eliud Kipchoge's documentary of when he was trying to break the 2-hour marathon and how he explained that it's the little things that you do leading up to and during the race that collectively determine whether you're going to have a great day or a miserable day. Do you have a list? Do you have a checklist of those little things as you're preparing or getting ready to toe the line? Or is that something that you had to do at Leadville as you were running the first 50 miles.
Yeah, you know, I definitely have that checklist going. And I think, you know, I think the beautiful thing about that documentary, The Last Milestone, is that in that instance, they were trying to shave seconds, you know, to get to that under 2 hour barrier. So they're taking all these factors into account, the position of the pacers, the shoes Kipchoge's wearing, the amount of nutrition he's getting. Actually, I thought it was really interesting when he would drink out of his bottles and he would toss them to the side. His nutritionist would pick up the bottle and see how much he drank to know exactly how much nutrition he was getting in.
Wow.
And then they would use that to calculate for later in the race. So to me, the most interesting parallel there is that in that case, they were talking about shaving seconds. And in most of the time in an ultra marathon, especially if you're talking 100 miles or more, seconds don't typically come into account. You're trying to do what you can to be the most efficient or the fastest you can be, but you're not thinking in terms of seconds. But it doesn't change the ideology. It's the same collection of decisions, things that you have to do to put yourself in a position to succeed. And it just plays out over a much longer period of time, but has a similar impact. And I think that's one of the most interesting things about watching that film and thinking, wow, this applies exactly to so many races and experiences that I've had before.
Scott, I really liked your question about, do you have a checklist or did you start making a checklist after you got in, you know, off the start line? Like, oh, this day isn't going well. Let me rehearse and see the moves that I made. So my question, Adam, did you have a clue that this was going to be kind of an off day or an off start? At least the eighth place finish is not off, you know, the first half of coming in, what, 32nd or 38th place through that same spot. When did you realize that this could be a problem, before the race or as you were getting into it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I, you know, the typical checklist of things for me leading into the race, food that I'm eating, sleep, just kind of general check-ins with the body, mental state, feeling fresh and energized for the race. And those are the kind of things that I look for before the race. But then just like what you said, once you get into it, then it's kind of like, I think of, you know, Google Maps or something. It's like, you're going somewhere, you take a wrong turn, recalculating. And so in the head, that's like, that's what's happening. It's like, okay, you thought you had to worry about these things. Now your stomach is causing mayhem. What are you going to do? Okay, I'm going to get to the aid station. I'm going to take some Tums. I'm going to see how that goes. I'm not going to allow myself to do anything until I've run for an hour with the Tums in my stomach to see if they've worked, you know? And then I'm going to switch to liquid calories. Those are usually a little more gentle on the stomach. See how that goes for a while. And then you start kind of making those adjustments on the fly. And for me, it's just problem solving. You've got a lot of time out there. You know, I'm sure you guys have gotten this question a million times. What do you think about when you're running for so long, right? Sometimes it's nothing. Sometimes it's for an hour straight, you're thinking, how can I make myself feel better right now? What are the things that I can do right now? What are the things that I can do at the next aid station to make myself feel better and turn this race around?
You know, this is such a fascinating topic, not only for the new runner, but also for the veteran runner like yourself, Adam. For a new runner to use this principle to say, it's the small things that cumulatively add up to make a big difference. If you're just starting out running and all you can do is get out and run for a minute, hey, that's a minute. Do it 2 minutes tomorrow. Do it 3 minutes the next day. And those cumulative increases are going to make you a better runner. Coincidentally, I recently heard a talk that talked about the British cycling team. And I sent this article, an article over to Adam and to Don after I read this, because I thought, hey, this really relates to the topic we're talking about. And those of you who don't know the British cycling team, I'll give you a brief synopsis. The British cycling team up until 2008 sucked. They couldn't win anything. They couldn't win a race to the local tavern on the bike. They had zero wins for 110 years. They had never won the Tour de France. They had never won an Olympic medal. And in 2003, they hired a guy named Dave Brailsford to be the new performance director of the British cycling team. And he came in with a philosophy called, and put this in quotes, everybody needs to underline this, put it into their memory bank, the aggregation of marginal gains, What this means is tiny margins of improvement in everything you do. So what he did was they went through and broke down everything that goes into riding a bike, and they tried to improve each of those 1%. And if you do that, you'll get significant increases when you add them all together. So the result was, in 2008, just 5 years later in 2008, they dominated the road and track cycling events at the Beijing Olympics, winning 60% of the total number of medals possible. That's a pretty dramatic change. And in 2012, Bradley Wiggins was the first Briton to win the Tour de France. And shortly thereafter, one of his teammates won in 2015, 2016, and 2017. So it wasn't this overhauling large change in their program, but these small incremental 1% changes that led to significant changes all the way around. My question for you, Adam, as a coach, how do you coach that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, Scott, I want to say I love that you sent that article over, because I'm a big fan of James Clear, and Atomic Habits is an amazing book if you've never read it before. There's a ton of great parallels to a life of ultra running. But one thing I want to say before I talk about how it relates from a coaching perspective, I think one of the beauties about the aggregation of marginal gains is that that applies to both how you can improve, you know, throughout a race, throughout your training, all those kind of things. But it's also the mentality that I take and that I try to teach others that I coach to take, of how you prepare for a really long distance ultra event. And that's focusing on the mile that you're in, rather than trying to change 70% of something, change 1%, rather than focusing on how am I going to feel when I get to mile 70, worry about where you're at mile 20. You know, it's taking those small increments and breaking things down into digestible pieces. And I think that's the same mentality that the Sky cycling team took when they made those changes. It was, rather than trying to overhaul everything, let's find the little things that we can do. And so from a coaching perspective, it's all about looking at, it kind of goes back to the mantra that I had during Leadville, controlling what you can control. So when you go out there and you're running a tempo run, for example, the challenge would be try to make yourself 1% faster on this run. You know, focus on being just a little bit better on this effort today. Similarly, it's the same thing with other aspects of preparing for an event. You know, from a nutritional standpoint, I just had one of my athletes just ran her first 50 miler in the Bay Area, and we were going through the nutrition side of things before she ran the race, and part of that 1% for her was experimenting with more nutrition, because she had tried one thing that worked for a little bit, but then when she got deeper into events, her stomach didn't handle it as well. So the 1% gain there was trying other types of fuel, so you have more things to choose from, more options when you get deeper into a race. And so it's just taking all the different facets of ultra running and preparing for events and finding the little pieces of that you can try to improve upon every single day. And I think it's really all about the being in the moment, focusing on today part piece of it that I think is the most important.
Gosh, as I listen to you say that, Adam, I start to think to myself, do I have to make every mistake to learn this stuff? I mean, can I go, good, okay, I learned that one. That was hard, but I've learned it. It's good to use lube when that happens. You know, it's a school of hard knocks, no doubt. Some lessons don't come for free, and some you have to repeat a number of times to really get it through our heads.
Yeah, totally. And I think that goes along perfectly with the British cycling team. It's like they didn't, when they made all these changes, there was some growing pains, you know, it didn't get those marginal gains didn't stack up the next day. It took years, but then eventually they did. And so it's, you know, it's a practice in both patience and repetitiveness of showing up every single day and saying there's always something you can do to make yourself a little bit better. I think even on, easy runs, one thing that I've kind of, you know, since Leadville, I haven't been running a lot, just letting the body recover. But one thing I've been thinking about a lot lately and actually been preaching to some of my runners is listen to the body a little bit more. Like actually, you know, you do it in a race. You say, okay, check in here, check in, you know, need to take in some fuel, need to get to the aid station and roll out the muscles a little bit, those kind of things. But on an easy run where your body feels fine the whole time, still check in and say, how's the body feeling? Is there something that I need right now? Is there something that can make this a little bit better? And I think doing those things more consistently is what ultimately builds over time. So it's not just the small decisions on one day, it's the small decisions every day over the course of an entire training block leading into a race. So, you know, you're not, a race typically isn't going to fall apart or be a raging success because of one thing. It's going to be a culmination of a million things.
I love all that. This question is for both you, Scott, and Adam. You said absolutely focus during the race, think and listen. And then you encouraged us to, hey, on your training runs, treat it like a race. Listen to yourself. Practice listening. So when you go out there on the race, you have a well-rehearsed conversation going. So my question to you two, should we start listening to ourselves outside of training and outside of racing? Is there some benefit to that? If you have a 2-hour run planned,
yeah,
what are you listening to for 22 hours?
Yeah. As you guys know, I'm a huge believer in the mental side of sport. I just think it's such a fascinating piece and such a beautiful aspect of what we love to do. So for me, I think there is a lot of preparation that goes in those 22 hours that goes into preparing for the two. And it's not an all the time thing. I think there's a difference between you've got to, in my opinion, you have to be mentally engaged the right amount of time, but not too much. Because if you're constantly overthinking or focusing on something, for some people that can be sustainable. For others, it creates burnout. And I think can wear you down mentally to the point where, you know, it's almost like you'd have to rest your body physically. You've got to rest your mind as well. So I like to use that time to prepare mentally and position myself as well as I can, but not for 22 straight hours, but for, you know, for targeted times when I'm thinking about certain things or, you know, a couple hours before my run, I'm planning my route or whatever. And then I think to myself, okay, this is what's going to happen today. And then I might say, okay, this is the kind of the flow of the run I'm going to do. And depending on the style of the workout, here's what I can do to maximize it and get the most out of myself today. So those kind of things. So there's definitely, for me, there's more mental preparation than anything that goes into that outside time. But it's targeted and maximized and not just like a drain yourself over the course of a day, you know, mentally thinking about this one thing before it happens.
I really like that. Moderation is always key in everything, right? And there's times to pedal hard. There's times to coast, to go to Scott's Cycling article that he brought up. And so, and then there's times when you've worked hard, you've concentrated, and now you set everything in motion. Nutrition's there. It's time for the mind to rest so that when it's time to focus, you can concentrate completely. So I love that. Scott, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I really appreciate Adam's answer to that because as I'm thinking through, okay, what am I thinking about the 22 hours outside of my 2-hour run? I think most of the time I'm thinking about what went wrong on the last run. You know, I didn't feel well. My legs felt heavy. What can I do? Maybe I shouldn't be drinking as much Coke Zero. Maybe I shouldn't be having that big piece of pie after dinner, and thinking about what I did wrong instead of what Adam focused on, which is I have a run coming up in the morning. How am I going to make that the best training module or the best training time? How am I going to make the most use of that 2 hours? And man, I need to flip that switch and quit saying this is why it went bad and I need to change to I have an opportunity to go out for a 2-hour run. How can I maximize the benefit of that 2 hours that I spend out there? So Adam, thank you so much. That's the golden nugget I'm taking out of this is what is to the theme of this podcast, what is a couple things that I can improve just 1% that's going to set me up for a better run tomorrow morning? I love that.
It's a good reminder that whether you have the race of your life or a really terrible race or similarly a great training run or a really bad one, it's less about the end result and more about the things that you can build off of either way, right? So if you had the best race of your life, there's a reason that that happened. What were the things that went well? And kind of take those things and roll with them into the next, you know, training block or next event. And similarly, if it didn't go well, what were the things that either you did do well, you know, even though the outcome wasn't great, or the things that needed to be improved for the next one? So if you look at it that way, every single event, regardless of what the final result says, is a massive building block for the next one, you know, and it's all about just kind of shifting the mentality to say, I'm going to focus on the things that can make me better moving forward instead of the things that went poorly. And sometimes those things are the same. The thing that could have gone better, or that, you know, that went really poorly, those things overlap a little bit. So it's just determining those things and then using that and building momentum as you continue on.
Yeah, I don't know whether I'm always thinking about the negative. I think that my thing is I'm putting too much time and effort on the analysis of the past run instead of the planning of the future run and how I can make that more effective. And in fact, very little planning goes into that except for what I'm going to do. You know, I'm going to do 4 miles with some hill strides or something like that. But here's the question I have. We've talked about these small changes that can aggregate into large changes. What are you working on in your personal training or personal running that you're trying to improve just a little bit? Are you thinking about little things that you're improving, and what are those?
That's a great question. Actually, yeah, I was talking about this earlier today. There's one thing in particular that for me is really the thing that I'm trying to drill down on moving forward. As I mean, again, there's a collection of a whole bunch of things, but the thing at the top of that list for me is the assessment of the body after a big event and when I'm ready to really start preparing the way I want to prepare for the next event. So too often in the past, I've run a race and afterwards felt pretty good and kind of just rolled right into the next training block without really giving my body the rest that it needed. Mm-hmm. And then that doesn't always manifest until down the road in various forms. Sometimes it's an injury. Sometimes it's just fatigue. You know, sometimes someone can be really fit and then they show up to an event and they're just tired. So that can happen too. And so I've just, after Leadville, I said to myself, okay, I don't really, you know, I'm going to run a few probably shorter races, toward the end of the year, but I don't have anything like that was the A race for me this year. So I've kind of told myself, you need to really listen to the body and see and check in with yourself a bunch of times over the coming weeks, and just see where you're at and say, okay, am I ready to start really pushing it on runs and training hard again? Or do I need more time to just rest, keep building up on strength work and cross training, and then be better for it, you know, a couple months down the road? So that's the thing for me. It's the post-race analysis of the body as it relates to when I'm ready to jump into the next thing.
What about you, Don?
Oh, I'll go, Scott, but you'll have to follow up me because you're not going to have me disclose this without hearing yours. But Adam, I would love to reschedule a podcast because it deserves more than just a brief comment. I would love to talk about training blocks. Because let me tell you about my training block. It's today until the day I'm done running. That's not a good block. There's no, like, you know, points in there where I can take a little breather. It's just like I just run forever. That's not good. So I'd love to talk about training blocks. Scott, to your question, what am I doing now besides training blocks? What am I doing now to make myself a better runner? And it started 30 minutes ago. Because that's when I read the article about the cyclists that you sent over. And the thing that I really loved about that, and I want to practice it, and I would encourage anybody that's listening to at least consider it, and it's about the never miss twice rule. Giving yourself a little bit of grace if you slip up or you make a mistake or you don't get a long run that you wanted or a good run that you wanted or a nutrition change that you're trying to make. Just accept it. Give yourself grace that you had an error. But just don't do it twice. And that way you'll never really fall off the track. So if I miss a workout, if I miss a stretching or whatever I'm stretching that I'm supposed to be doing, then I need to never miss twice. So how about you, Scott?
I think that little laughing means that maybe you should work 1% more on stretching, Don.
Oh, I think a 0.5% would be much more than I'm doing now. I've found a new way to put shoes on without tying them. I'm getting a little stiffer, Scott.
Hey, I am going to pull the curtain back to let you know a little bit more about Don's personality and to a lesser extent, my personality.
Well, and, do I have any say in this, Scott? You're just going to throw it out there?
No. And this is the personality. It could be a flaw. It could be a good thing. And that is Don and to some extent myself, we don't, when we want decide to do something, it's all in. And that's one of the things I really admire about Don. When he makes a decision to do something, it's all in. I think we may have talked about it on the podcast. I had done some research and I decided that going vegan may be something that would be beneficial to me. And so I wanted to do an experiment of one. So overnight, I decided to become vegan, turned on the switch, and just went 100% vegan overnight. And I did it for 3 years. And, you know, we can talk about maybe some other time, some of the results and that. I'm no longer vegan. But for many people, doing that, jumping in 120% is not healthy, and it may not be easy to be successful at. So if, for example, you want to become vegan, just as an example, maybe try one day a week. One day a week, or meatless Wednesdays, where you just don't eat meat for one day, and those incremental changes, and I think that doing that can help. One of the things that I'm working on in my training that a coach has helped me with is I never ever did speed work. What speed work to me was envisioning going to the local high school track and running around the track 400 meters at a time for 3 hours and trying to do a faster 400 meter on the last one than you did the first one. And to me, I would rather have bamboo shoots stuffed underneath my fingernails than do that. And so I never did it. And this coach helped me realize that very small increments of speed training, 20 seconds speed strides, and do it four times. Four times times 20 seconds, that's 1 minute during a workout twice a week. And I was thinking, what? How is that going to help? And it really has. So that's the one thing that I'm working on in mine is that what I need to work on is some strength work.
And your math, I think it's a minute 20 if you do four 20 seconds.
You know,
he was rounding down.
He's extremely fast. He gets 120 seconds done in a minute.
That's why I use a watch. Thank you, Don, for pointing that out.
It was just there. I just had to do it. I'm sorry, pal. We can get even later when I have to try to follow you through those speed spurts. It's the little things that build to success, like we're talking with Adam Kimball about. And one of the things that are little, actually very big, is your nutrition.
UCAN is a great solution that you should try to improve just that little bit. And it actually may add up to be a big thing. UCAN is the super starch. What does that mean? It's easy on your stomach. It's easily digestible, quickly digestible, and it gives you that constant energy instead of the spikes that those other sugary drinks give you.
So stay in the middle of the trail and not on the side of the trail and use UCAN to power you down the road.
What's the side of the trail, Freeman?
That's where people are bent over checking their knees out.
Yeah, with UCAN, you stay in the middle of the trail, and they have a lot of different products that can get you there. They have the energy powder. They have the energy bars. They have the energy plus protein, and they have the new Edge Energy, which is that gel packet-like thing that is really convenient. Put it in your shorts, give it a squeeze, bam, you're off and going in the middle of the trail.
So go to ucan.co/TRN for 20% off. Use promo code TRN20 for 20% off.
And now back to more little things with Adam Kimball.
Hey guys, I did want to add something about what you were saying there. The whole discussion of the speed work stuff there, Scott. That is the aggregation of marginal gains. You're describing the process of taking these little changes and tying that all together and growing. And I think another thing I want to point out, and something that, again, that I preach to my athletes, because some people, one of the reasons that I love coaching is you get to work with all different types of people with different mentalities, different backgrounds, different goals. And just taking speed work, for example, some people, you know, I'll give them a workout and they won't say anything. They'll just do it. Some people will do it and then they'll, you know, they'll say, wow, that was really tough, or here's why. Other people will kind of voice their displeasure is maybe not the right word, but just kind of say, oh, I really don't like speed work. I don't like doing these kind of workouts. And when that's the answer that I get, then I say, okay, what can we do here to make this fun? Because if we're not having fun throughout this process, then what are we doing, right? Like that's why we all came to this in the first place. You're challenging yourself, you're becoming a better person, but you're also having fun. And so that's a big thing for me is, okay, so if this type of speed work, you know, is daunting, or you don't really like, it doesn't excite you, what can we do to tweak that where you can say, oh, that was actually pretty fun, you know? And maybe it's, I love doing intervals just like you described, Scott, where it's 30-second bursts, or sometimes you're running up a hill and you just do 20 seconds hard, then you let yourself recover, and then, you know, kind of build that stuff in. And again, it can just be a total of 2-3 minutes over the course of an hour run, or it can be a lot longer than that. But I think it's really important to find what's sustainable for you to make it enjoyable.
You know, every time I talk to you, Adam, I always get inspired. And I knew that was going to happen. So I brought my running clothes with me to work because I'm going to go straight to the trail after this. I just knew it was going to happen. I go, I know I'm going to talk to Adam. I want to get over for a run. I'm not going to go back and get my stuff. I'm just going to bring it with me. That always happens. Let me ask you this question, Adam. What percentage of the time do you run solo? What percentage of the time do you run with a group?
Great question. I'd say it's probably 75-25 solo and with a group. And I think running with a group does a lot of good things. Here's how I see it. I think one, if there's a workout or just a run that you're not looking forward to, try to do it with somebody, because one, the time will pass more quickly. Two, you'll probably have some good laughs, some good conversation. You know, the impetus of us having this chat, I told you, I went on a run with my friend, Mark Ganey, who's one of the co-founders of Strava. And, it was the whole, we ran for an hour and we were talking about this stuff the whole time. And it felt like we ran for 15 seconds, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think running with a group is great for that. It's great if you're trying to get faster and there's people that run faster than you, and just, you try to keep up with them a little bit more. And it's great just from, you know, a social aspect. So the nature of the 75% is pretty much that convenience. You know, I'm free when I'm free. There's no coordination necessary. And I just go and get it done. I really like time alone in my own head. So that plays into that as well. But I think that the running with a group can serve a lot of really, really positive functions. And if somebody isn't doing that a lot, I would encourage you to give it a shot and see what you think, because I think for a lot of people, that can add a lot of value to their training.
And it keeps things fresh, right? Maybe we should plug that in, say, hey, wait, I don't have anything this week with this thing, or the next 2 weeks with anybody. I need to have some running with someone. Scott and I, since we're not living in close proximity right now, we went out the other week, and the miles just flew by. It was like, this is really effortless with Scott, because we're just talking, we're having a good time, we're you know, thinking about podcast topics, or we're talking about family stuff. It's just really, really refreshing to be out there with a friend and sharing that time and going out there and doing it all on your own. Pretty soon you get in your own head and it can get a little bit crazy in there. So it's nice to have someone to share it with.
Hey, you know, but on the flip side, isn't it great to get out on a run by yourself and solve all your problems? You know, it's the one time where you're not checking Instagram every 3 minutes or distracted by emails coming in or phone calls coming in, and you can disconnect and really tune into the rhythm of your running. I think that there's something to do with that rhythm and really solving problems and thinking deeply about topics. I think that is one of my favorite parts of running alone.
I'm glad you said that. And I'm gonna change the word just for the sake of conversation from disconnect to reconnect. I'm not saying that one is good or better than the other, but I had a couple runs in the last couple of weeks where I came back and got to the car and had to get out the phone and take notes of the things that I had solved, the things yeah. that I didn't want them to go away. And some of them I was rehearsing on the way back. Okay, I gotta write this. And I realized how much I loved running for what it does to me in that space. It's like, wow, I can create and I can solve problems and I can think about things that I never would have unless I was out there. And these six bullet points that I listed when I came back never would have existed. And so I thought, I just love being out here and doing this. I'm grateful that I have that as a tool.
Yeah, totally. I was just going to chime in and say, I've actually gotten to the point where I've told my wife, if there's a lot of things going on in my life and she starts to feel I'm getting frustrated or a little stressed out, to just tell me, Adam, get out the door and go for a run. Yeah. Because literally every single time, I'm being 100% real here, I can't remember ever coming back from a run and being upset with how I was feeling after the run. Literally 100% of the time. I go, like, if I'm frustrated, I go for a run, and when I'm done, I feel great, you know? And a lot of it has to do with that. When you're out there, you start to, you know, feel, get in rhythm with your body. And then you think about the things that were bothering you. And then you start to sort of address those. You take a calmer approach to it. You know, for me, if I'm frustrated, I can't really think the way I need to think. And then I get out on a run and suddenly clarity comes into place and everything just seems so much more manageable. And I can't understate how powerful that is.
You know, Scott spoke for me earlier, so let me speak for Scott.
Now, oh no.
to a lesser point me, but to a greater extent, Scott, how many times I've heard him say, like 20% through the run, 25%, you know, and he didn't say this, he didn't give me an indication that he didn't want to go for the run. He would say 20% through, you know, I didn't want to run today, but I'll tell you what, I'm so glad I'm here. I've heard him say that so many times. When you mentioned that, it made me think, you know, that's Scott. He just has to get himself out there sometimes. We all do. Get himself out there, and pretty soon he falls into that rhythm. His brain starts to do the whatever waves. We'd have to ask Dr. Maffetone which brain wave he's using out there, but something's happening to make him happy.
Guys, I just thought of another great sort of relational point there. Going back to James Clear in his book Atomic Habits, he talks about, you know, generally speaking, it's about forming good habits and how you can do that and then breaking bad habits. But he actually used running as an example. He said, if you're trying to get into a place where you want to run more often, again, the aggregation of marginal gains, you got to look at this instead of saying, okay, I'm going to run 3 miles a day. And then you get to it and you're like, oh, I don't really want to do that. And then, you know, every day that week, you don't run at all. He says, put your running shoes out and then go put them on. So if you just say, I'm going to go put my running shoes on, then they're on, then are you just going to walk out the door or are you going to take them off? You know, like at that point, you've taken a step towards doing what you want to do. And that'll, if once you have them on, you might say, okay, now I'm going to go out the door and maybe I'll run for 10 minutes. And I think sometimes we just have to put ourselves in that mental space of setting ourselves up for success as best we can, because once you get into it, it's a lot easier. It's really the barrier to entry is often just the very initial point of jumping off.
I will tell you a story. I think this was last week where I was sitting in the parking lot at the trailhead and I was texting Don about something. And I said, I really don't want to go run today. And he said, just go run for a mile. And I go, yeah, I can do that. And then 5 miles later, I'm texting him. I said, hey, thanks for letting me go run for a mile.
Yeah.
So all I needed was the push to go for a mile.
And I'm going to follow up on that. I didn't say run for a mile. I said run down to that point in the trail that you have the option of turning and coming back to the truck and making it a mile or making it the longer course. So run to that point and then make your decision. And I knew once he was out there long enough to get to that turn point, no way Scott Ward was turning. He's going to go for the whole thing.
Yeah. And that's, guys, this relates back to the last conversation that we had about DNFing races on a previous podcast, where sometimes you got to just get out of the aid station and walk for 10 minutes and then see what happens. Maybe your mind and your body say, you know what, I can't keep going, instead of saying I'm done and that's it. And it's again, it just goes back to that mentality of taking these little bites and hopefully those accumulate to something big in the end.
And it's okay to throw in the towel at sometimes in an ultra. It's okay. You have to be okay with it. It doesn't mean you're weak. Doesn't mean you're not an ultra runner. Doesn't mean you're not tough. It means you had a lot of things that were piled up that would make it foolish for you to go.
Yeah.
But sometimes you've got to stuff it back in your head. Back to our topic about 30 minutes ago, you've got to know when to say when, right?
And I want to say, it's more of a question to Adam. you gave yourself permission, even though you knew you were competing for a win at Leadville, you said things aren't going well. You gave yourself permission to back off and slow down, knowing that it actually paid off in the full scheme of things. You know, you didn't make it to the podium, but you made it. The second half was an amazing, amazing race, and you made it to eighth place overall. How do you give yourself permission for that?
Yeah, I think I love that question. First of all, I think that, again, that brings up an interesting point of going into a race. I think it's very important to go into a race with specific goals, but I think it's also good to have layers of goals. So, you know, you can have I like ABC goals that can be related to time, place, whatever you want it to be. But I think it's important to recognize you might be having the day of your life and everything feels easy. And then you want to get the most out of yourself. You don't want to settle for something that, you know, on an average day you could have done. You want to go for everything you can. But at the same time, if it's a race where things aren't going as well, then you've got to sort of reassess and say, what can I do to make success out of today? So my point in bringing that up is that I think when you go in with this mentality of I'm going to get the most out of myself today and have the goals, but also recognize that those goals can shift and change throughout the course of the race and you can sort of recalibrate. I think that's really important, because if I went in and I said, okay, you know, because initially I wanted to podium at Leadville, that was my goal. And I thought that on a great day, I could have done that. And I had a great half day, you know, I had a really, really tough first half of the race. But in that first half of the race, when things weren't going well, if I had said, listen, you're in 25th, 26th place right now, you're so far off of the podium, this isn't what you wanted. That would have been a perfect chance for me to say, listen to the voice in my head, because the voice in my head was saying that. And it would have been easy to say, yeah, okay, I'm gonna throw in the towel. But instead I said, no, you know, I think there's some things I can do to change this. I might not get back to third place, but let's just see what happens if I can make these positive changes, these small accumulations of little decisions, and what's going to happen. Because to me, if you go out and you have a great race, personally, I learn, and I don't like to have bad races, but races where I have struggles and things I got to work through, or maybe it doesn't turn out the way I was hoping, those are the ones I learn the most from. And so I wanted to, in the moment, say to myself, okay, let's play this experiment out right now. I want to quit. My body feels terrible. But if I do these things, is it going to get better? And how much better? And I was able to see at a highly competitive race, I was able to move up 15 spots or 20 spots, whatever it was, throughout the course of 50 miles, and really finish with a time in a place that I was happy with, especially considering how the beginning of the race went. So
yeah,
to me, just, I don't know, having the flexibility to allow your mind to go in with a goal, but then if things are playing out differently, sort of shove that aside and say, this is the new plan. We've got to attack it this way. I think that's really important. I actually don't even know if I answered your question, Scott.
I don't care whether you answered the question or not. You gave me a good answer.
I think we need, I think like in the courtroom, we need to play that back and see what Scott's question was. So Adam, eighth place finish at Leadville. You have podium finishes, first place. Are you as proud of that eighth place finish as you are with the first place finish?
Yeah, maybe even more so. You know, when you think about the logistics of it, it's weird because obviously I'd rather win a race than get eighth place. Mm-hmm. But when you take into account all those factors, I'm so proud of myself and my team, because my team was there every step of the way encouraging me, saying, hey, you know, like, things are okay. Just keep doing what you can do, and we'll make this happen. And again, it goes back to the importance of having a good team surrounding you, because if I was out there by myself trying to do all that problem solving, I can't say that I would have had the strength that I did with those people behind me. So yeah, it's very clear to me, Don. The answer is yes. The eighth place finish, when you've had to struggle through it and make adaptations and push yourself and say, I think mentally, I had to mentally push myself from the perspective of I'm not as high up in the race as I want to be, and still work through that and then be satisfied with the day. To me, that's as valuable as a win.
Yeah, I really love that. And so it makes me look at the set of racers through new eyes. You know, everybody that's out there with the courage to pin the bib on is a winner. If you make it halfway through, you may have pushed through things that you're so proud of to get to the halfway point. Celebration, that's a win. And the story can be told all the way through for everybody that enters that race, whether they make it to the end or not. There's a lot of winners in ultra running, which is really, really cool.
Absolutely.
One of the things we brought up earlier was set yourself up for success. You know, don't set yourself up for failure. And Scott and I would like an invitation to your next Adam's Backyard Ultra because he and I have never stood on a podium and we'd love to stand next to you on that thing.
If we're just us three, we'd be guaranteed a podium spot. I never thought that's the problem I've had all in my whole running career. I haven't been on the podium because the field has been way too big.
This is the Adam Kimball Invitational and it has three runners.
You know what's funny about that? I've got a friend who's always said this, and I think he's right. Whether you're in a race with 5 people or 1,000 people, you can't help who shows up. All you can do is go and run your race, right? So if you win a race with 5 people or 1,000 people, you still won the race. Doesn't matter.
There you go.
So I'll see you guys at the Adam Kimball Invitational.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Adam.
Before we finish, the last episode you were on with your friends Jim O'Brien and Connor Crouch, you teased us with some kind of a running journal. Tell us how that's progressing.
Yeah, the listeners won't be able to see this, but I'm holding up the cover for you here, Scott. So, on October 1st, our running journal, Chasing Twilight, a joy journal for runners, was published, and we're really excited about it. I think it was a really cool product, and it's been a fun journey being a part of putting it out there. But essentially, it's a journal designed for runners. It can be for anybody, but it's designed for runners. And we did a few things that we thought were important for a journal based off of our own experiences with previous journals. So one of those things is there's no dates. So I've had journals in the past where it's October 1st, October 2nd, October 3rd. I miss 2 days and then I'm 2 days behind now. I'm just going to stop using this journal. So we wanted it to be something that people could just pick up and use whenever they want to. It can be once a week, once a month, once a year, whatever works for you. The next thing is, we didn't have prompts, so there's no things that say, how are you feeling today? You know, what was the weather like? That kind of thing. It's up to you to decide what you want to write about. And instead, myself, Connor, and Jim have written entries, and we basically journaled for about 3 months before or after runs and just kind of freeform what we were feeling, what was happening during those runs. And then those entries are together in the journal. So you might open it up, read an entry that I've written about a run I went on in Lake Tahoe, and that might inspire something in your head to say, oh, that's interesting. This is what I'm thinking about in my life, and then sort of use that as a semi-prompt. So that was the intent. It's a bunch of entries from the three of us and then space for runners to record their journey, but I'm excited and hopeful that people will really enjoy it.
Where's the best place to pick this up, Adam?
So there's a few different places you can pick it up. There's actually a local bookstore in Truckee, if you're in the Tahoe area, called Word After Word Books. You can get it there. And then it's also available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So if you just type in Chasing Twilight Journal, it'll pop up right away on all three of those.
And if you're inspired like we are to go out for a run after listening to this podcast or during the podcast thinking, you know what, I'd like to have Adam coach me. What's the best way to get a hold of you for that, Adam?
Yep. Adam Kimble, KIMBLE.com. Feel free to reach out anytime. I sometimes I'll have people reach out to me and they'll have questions about coaching and I don't end up coaching them, but it just starts a relationship where I can give them feedback or we connect at a race or whatever. I love being a part of the community in every way possible. So feel free to reach out anytime.
Well, the 2022 season for the Adam Kimball Invitational is closed. So if you're going to reach out to try to get in, that's done.
2023's got a waiting list though. So
is there a lottery for the three positions?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The three of our names are, there's a lot of our entries in the lottery. We'll see about everybody else.
We'll go out and run
Moss.
Join us next week for one of the fun podcasts that we do periodically, which is Drop Bag.
We're going to bring Andy Jones Wilkins and we're going to knock around some of our favorite topics. We never know what we're going to get.
The best part of it is we just reach into that drop bag. You may reach in and put your hand in some Vaseline, or you may reach in and you may grab a UCAN Edge energy packet.
And each one has a specific purpose, and you don't want to mix that up. So join us next week.
It takes a team of people to finish a race. It takes a team of people to put together a podcast. And we want to thank some of those people.
Our Patreon supporters, we appreciate their participation.
We want to thank especially our business Patreon supporter, Doug Crumley at Crumley & Associates. You can find him at DougCrumleyJr.com. He's your wealth advisor. He's the one that's going to coach you to be wealthy.
We'd like to thank our producer, Doug Mayer, and our associate producer, Ryan Warr.
And especially our social media expert, Yana Gibalova, who just joined us and is doing a wonderful job.